century turbine generator, which we're going to learn all about. Paul, thank you for joining us.
Good morning, and may the vortex be with you.
All right, well, let's start there. What have you invented?
I've invented the world's first vortex turbine that works off rotational kinetic energy, which is the spin of water instead of the direct fall linear kinetic energy.
Okay.
Water moving in a straight line.
So we're talking about water creating electricity.
Right.
Hydro. Okay.
Basically, water going down a plug hole and creating electricity.
Yeah, look, that's right. I mean, we've all seen water spinning in a plug hole, and if you imagine that vortex is an engine, the vortex is driven by the spin of the Earth, by what's known as the Coriolis force, and that was a force identified by a Frenchman called Gustave Gaspard Coriolis in the early 19th century.
He sounds Greek.
Well, he does, but he's not. He fakes it. It's like that Anthony Quinn line. There are two types of people. The Greeks are the ones that want to be Greek.
Yeah.
So, he conceived the idea that there was a Coriolis force, a deflective force. And that's because he was in a train, he stuck his hand out the window, and the hand was being pushed back by the resistance of the earth, or the air. And he thought, well, that must apply to everything. And indeed it did. And he worked out that it applied to currents, it applied to air, all fluids. And it became known as the Coriolis force. And that's the force that drives hurricanes north and south of the equator. And that's where you get this sort of perception that north of the equator, hurricanes spin in an anti-clockwise direction. And south of the equator, they're called cyclones, and they spin in a clockwise direction. And
is that
that's
true?
Caused by the Coriolis. That's absolutely true. Although people say, oh, look, I can get the water in my bathtub to spin any way I like.
Mm.
And that's true, because gravity affects it as well.
Right.
However, if you put a stopwatch on it, you'll find that water that drains in the southern hemisphere clockwise, which is the way the Earth wants it to drain, drains faster than if it goes the other way. So
wow.
There's an efficiency there.
There you go. So, is the thing about toilets true then as well?
Well, some toilets.
Yeah,
depends
right.
how they're made. It depends what's in them.
Yeah.
So is the southern hemisphere anti-clockwise or clockwise?
The southern hemisphere is clockwise.
Okay.
Cyclonic and anticyclonic movements.
I swear when I was in the US recently, the toilet...
No, don't go there.
What's that for lunch?
Yeah. It definitely went yeah. clockwise.
Anyway, right. Just to finish my answer so that your listeners understand the principle of it.
Yeah.
If you imagine... there were three... Before my patent, there were three turbines in the world. One's mm-hmm. called a Poulton wheel, the other's called a Francis turbine, and the third's called a Kaplan turbine. What they all have in common is they all work off linear kinetic energy. And kinetic sounds like a very scientific word, but it's actually a Greek word. It comes from the word kinesi, and all it means is movement.
I thought you meant nightclub.
Yeah, well, yeah, that happens in nightclubs too. Usually it's lineal or vertical.
Right.
So, and the idea is that water is moving in a straight line and it has to fall a particular distance to have enough pressure to turn the wheel.
Yeah.
So the one that we're all familiar with is the Poulton wheel that you can imagine under a waterfall. The water hits the Poulton wheel and it starts to spin.
So this is
that's a conventional turbine.
It's sort of thing that you'd see on a paddle steamer or
on
something.
On a paddle
like
steamer.
A big wheel that...
Yeah, they make electricity. Also,
yeah.
Francis turbos, they look like a merry-go-round. They're put
right.
in front of a pipe.
Yep.
The pipe, water comes out at great pressure, turns it around. Kaplan turbine looks like a ship's propeller. They put it in a river. The river passes through it. But the water is always moving in a straight line. Okay.
Right.
Back in 1975, I realised that water doesn't move just in a straight line. It also moves in a circle.
Right.
It's called rotational kinetic energy. And it also occurred to me that if you were to take the Poulton wheel off its horizontal axis... and move it onto its vertical axis.
Yep.
So you put it into a vortex, like an egg beater.
Mm-hmm.
You've just submerged all the blades.
Right.
So now they're all working. Before, only half of them were working because only half of them were in the water. So you've got an efficiency there straight away. Also, because a vortex, the water spirals to get out the bottom plug hole.
Mm-hmm.
Spirals. So whereas a Poulton wheel, 100 litres a second goes under the wheel once, in a vortex it keeps spiraling until it gets out. So it may move 7 or 8 times until it finally gets out of the vortex. So that water is then used 7 or 8 times.
Yep.
So there's another efficiency.
Yep.
And the third efficiency is that a conventional turbine only operates with the push of water, the pressure as it comes down the waterfall.
Mm-hmm.
A vortex also has suction.
Right.
So that means you get a push-pull effect. Because you get a push-pull effect, it means you don't need a spillway or an overflow. Conventional turbines, they all have resistance. The wheel causes resistance to the flow. So if 100 metres a second goes into the turbine, 50 litres a second, say, comes out, the other 50 has to go over a spillway or an overflow. Otherwise, you flood the valley. Mm-hmm. With a vortex turbine, you can have one after the other because what goes in comes out. The end result is that in less than 3 metres of fall, which is what conventional turbines need to operate under, say in the system that I got a grant for to build at Marysville, in 60 centimetres of fall, in a 2 metre diameter vortex, with 110 litres a second, I'll just say that again because anyone that's out there that's techie will do the math straight away. 60 centimetres of fall, 2 metre diameter vortex, right, with 110 litres a second, produces enough electricity to power a modern energy efficient house.
Right.
And that goes, people then say, wow, I mean, how does that happen? Because it's a very efficient system. So now there are four baby turbines in the world. There's a Francis, there's a Kaplan, there's a Pelton, and there's a Couris. The Couris vortex turbine is my baby. I've got a patent in the United States. Now I've got 18 patents around the world, and we're launching it in Europe, we're launching it in India. It's a big project now.
So where has your baby been used or installed?
Well, first of all, in Victoria, and I've got my pilot plant at Marysville on mm-hmm. the Stevenson's River. I've got a commercial prototype on a farm at Buxton, and it's owned by cattle farmers, and that's been installed there. Although we've got bureaucratic issues there, because you would have thought, now you build a better mousetrap and they'll beat a yeah. path to your door.
Yeah.
Turns out you build a better mousetrap, the mice beat a path to your door. Yeah. The cats wait to see what happens to the mice. So it's just difficult to run a renewable energy project in Australia. I'd say Australia is probably the hardest country in the world to do a renewable energy project.
Yeah, well, there are all sorts of politics and economics tied up in this at the moment. It's obviously a very significant conversation that we're having with regard to the, I guess, end of fossil fuels, things like Hazelwood Power Plant closing yes. down and our inevitable reliance on renewables. Is it your view that renewables can take up that strain that losing something like Hazelwood is going to cause?
Not only that, but see, people think that renewables are sort of peripheral to the mm. energy system.
Yeah.
And I remember in 1975 when I conceived my idea, I was having a big debate with some students doing engineering and science, and I was doing law and philosophy. And I said to them, you guys have got to come up with practical perpetual motion. And they held me down. They said, well, that's why you're doing philosophy, not engineering. You've got no idea what you're talking about. It doesn't exist. And I said, it does. It's just that you guys are locked in a room and you're prisoners of your education and you can't see outside the square. I said, what's the square? I said, well, the square is that things will be moving perpetually until the sun goes supernova in 2 billion years. And that's sort of perpetual enough for me.
Yeah.
So the wind will be blowing perpetually, the sun will be shining perpetually, the ocean currents will be moving perpetually. You guys have to think outside the square. They then said to me, oh, you're talking about renewable energy. I said, yeah, well, a rose by any other name, you know, that's right, mm. so what? And they said, oh, that's just Mickey Mouse. That'll never replace baseload. It'll never replace nuclear. It'll never replace fossil fuels.
Yeah.
And I said, well, according to you guys, they're either going to fry or die.
Yeah.
You know, because there are obviously ways of doing it. Right now, if I got my statistics correct, renewables represent about 30% of the energy mix.
In Victoria?
Globally.
Globally.
All right. However, hydro represents 70% of that.
70% of the 30%.
And 10 years ago, it used to be 62%. Now it's about 71%.
Right.
And people say, well, how? They're not building any more big hydro schemes because of the environmental impact. That's right, they're not. What's taken up the slack? Mini, micro, hydro, run of the river systems. People have figured out, wait on, we've got all these waterways and water moving in a straight line. Why don't we put conventional turbines in there?
Mm.
And so that's why hydro and renewables are going to fill the gap. It's a sleeping dragon. We've got to get our heads around the fossil fuels industry, stare them down and say, you know, your time has run, that's it. The world needs a new solution and renewables are that new solution.
Wow.
So Paul, what the hell is a barrister doing inventing the vortex?
Yeah, look, that's a lot of people have asked me that. I remember I was speaking once to the reader of physics at Oxford, who was spending a lot of time telling me my idea was Mickey Mouse and would never work. And he said the same thing, you know, stick to your knitting. You're a barrister with a philosophy degree, please, what do you think, you're going to save the planet? And I said to him, look, the way I see it, he actually started as a joke. He said to me, "What's your engineering background?" And I said, "I don't need one. I'm Greek. I'm one of the sons of Archimedes." So he had a laugh, and he says, "No, really?" And I say, "Well, I don't have an engineering degree. I've got a degree in philosophy, and I suppose my blessing and my curse is to look at things with an open mind and not be prejudiced by my education, because I haven't been told that a vortex is turbulence," which, by the way, is what engineers are told. They build it out of the system. And I said, "I saw a vortex and I saw an engine, and it looks symmetrical to me, so I thought, let's put something in it and make electricity." Then he says to me, "So you're an amateur, right?" I immediately started to dislike this guy. And I said to him, "The way I remember it, experts built the Titanic and amateurs built the Ark."
Yes.
Yeah. Rather be on the Ark.
Yeah, fair enough.
Right. So how did I come by it? Look, I happened at uni to see water going down a plug hole. We'd had this debate about renewable energy. The juices were flowing. And I literally had a eureka moment. And people say to me, "Seriously, there is such a thing as a eureka moment where all of a sudden you seem to open the door to the universe and you see something. It's a glimpse, you know." And it was this little boy saying to me, "Look at the water going down the plug hole. There's your perpetual motion. There it is." And as I say this story, and I've told it many times, I still feel the hair on the back of my neck going up, because it was like an epiphany, you know. And I saw it, and I didn't understand it.
You've said a lot of Greek words, by the way.
Yeah, it's a Greek program. My neighbour won't understand it. And then it was, I mean, I don't know, it sounds a bit corny, but was it a bit like sort of the idea coming through me, not from me, you know? Yeah. And I started seeing all the things that I said to you, the vortex and the turbine blades and the efficiencies and all, and that's how it happened. And from there, I spent years researching it. It's finally sort of, the patent story's great. 20 years I didn't know who to tell, so I kept a big secret. You know? So it's 1975, I had this epiphany, I thought it can't be that simple, started researching it, hasn't been done before, couldn't believe it. Rockefeller said everyone has an idea in their heart to make $1 billion, too scared to find out if it really works. So it was seasoning in my mind. I finally, it's 20 years later almost to the day, I've just done a case in the Industrial Relations Commission at Nauru House, sitting outside reading The Age. And above the article is an ad that looks like it's been put there by God, right? And I read, and it says, "Have you been carrying around an idea for 20 years and you don't know who to tell?" I know, I was laughing. I thought,
Sounds like a Jim Carrey film.
Yeah, well, it's like pulling my chain, you know, someone's pulling my chain. So, and I said, "Oh, we're the Invention Submission Corporation. We've just set up our new office from Pittsburgh, United States, in Nauru House."
You're already there.
And I was there. So I pick up the phone and I say, "It's Paul Kouros, barrister. I'd like to speak with your CEO." And people get nervous when a barrister rings up, so I go straight to the CEO. And this guy called Lou Sigmund comes to the phone. "Yes, Mr. Kouros." I said, "I'm ringing up about your ad." Pregnant pours over the phone. He says, "It's legal." I said, "Yeah, it's legal. I've got an idea for making electricity." Sigh of relief. "Well, I thought you were a barrister. Well, you're an inventor." I said, "I'm both, really." He says, "Well, yeah, how do you propose to make electricity, Mr. Kouros, you and everybody else?" And I say, "Out of water." He said, "Oh, I don't want to disappoint you, Mr. Kouros. It's been done. It's called hydroelectricity. It's old." And I said, "No, not conventionally, unconventionally." He says, "Well, how are you going to make it unconventionally out of water?" I said, "Out of a vortex." He says, "I won't trouble you with the accent, right? A vortex of what?" I said, "A vortex of water." He says, "Well, I'm an electrical engineer. I don't know what you're talking about. Come and see me. Sign a confidentiality agreement and tell me." I told him. He looks like he's been hit in the head with a flounder. And he says, "Well, the idea is brilliant and it's delicious simplicity, but surely it's been thought of before." And I said, "I don't know. I'm the idiot lawyer. You tell me. You're the electrical engineer.
And the inventing guy.
Yeah, and we got a feasibility study done by the head office in Pittsburgh. They said it's economically feasible. Got the patent attorneys to do a patent assessment. They said it's patentable. I applied for my patent. The US Patents Office grants it within 12 months, no changes, alterations, modifications. They told me they hailed it as a discovery, and I then got patents all over the world.
Just out of interest, you just used the expression, "looked like you've been hit in the head with a flounder." Have you ever done that or seen that?
Yeah, it's great fun. After a few drinks, it's great fun.
So we're going to take a quick break, and this is Pruinos Cafes.
Paul, just in terms of your family, your dad, who unfortunately passed away last year, was a big man in the Greek community, and was also a past board member and president of Haki.